You must have had a banker that was pretty good to you.
Yes, I did. I had a hometown banker from Humboldt, Kansas. He liked the lake. He eventually retired and moved here until he died, he and his wife. They were strong backers and backed me all the way. He was a great banker because he taught me how not to borrow money.
Even as you were borrowing it.
Anytime I came up with an idea and I wanted to borrow some money to do that, he'd ask the most embarrassing questions. Well, that seems like a pretty good idea. How much money? And so let me take a look at your past 90-day receivables. Well, goodness sakes, more people owe you that amount of money than you. Why are you borrowing money when they owe you this money? Why don't you go see if you can collect some of that money and come back and see me? He was good to me.
What was his name?
David Woods.
Yeah.
David and Jean Woods. She just passed recently.
Okay.
They had the place right down here at the end of the street.
Oh. But when you purchased half of Arrowhead, he took maybe a gamble on you? I mean, how old were you then in your 20s?
Like 26.
26.
Uh-huh.
Right. And you had never owned anything, real estate?
No. Nope.
Or managed that probably, but you did manage that. So would you say it was a gamble? He saw something in you.
Yes, and I remember I had a financial statement on the place and showed it to him. I said, well, yeah, it's in the black. And he said, well, yeah, it is, but, you know, liars can figure. Figures don't lie, but liars can figure.
Yeah.
And he said, on that financial statement, I wouldn't loan you one penny. And he said, I'll loan you the money, but I won't loan the company the money. And that's how I got started.
On your character and your work ethic, I would imagine.
Well, he'd known our family from Humboldt. We'd been long-time acquaintances.
Good, good, yeah.
Sure did help.
Right. And then you give credit to several gentlemen beyond him. Dwayne Spader?
Yes.
What did he mean to you?
Dwayne Spader operated a training company. He had been in the RV business and failed and went bankrupt. And he started a consulting business and grew it into where they had a school in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and they taught a 5-day total management workshop. And I mean to tell you, if you go through that thing in 5 days, you got a PhD in business. By the end of the 5 days, you got numbers jumping out of your head, and you know how everything fits together. And he always taught a safety net that starting at everything from the piece of gum in front of the counter at the ship store had a gross margin that you had to obtain to meet your safety net of 3% net. And that was what we worked towards, was making a 3% net. And if you followed all those programs properly, he was a real Nazi as far as compliance. And we had 20 groups, which were groups of 20 dealers that all had integrated accounting, and so we all compared notes every 90 days as to how we were doing, and those that did well got told they did well. Those that didn't certainly got told that, and we learned from our mistakes.
What a wonderful foundation for you to,
yes,
as you were beginning.
I would have never made it if I had not been through that training.
It was advertised, or somehow you heard about it? And
yeah, I had a friend, Al Walker, at Number 9 Marina, and he had heard about it, and he signed me up in the school, and we went together, and we were in 20 groups and followed that from then on.
What you learned there has its fingerprints on your business today, more than
likely. Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
We still use their formulas, and we are more successful when we do than when we don't. Tremendous person.
David Parker.
Yes. David Parker was an employee of Dwayne, and he taught the classes. And then he eventually started his own group, and owned 20 groups, of which I'm still a part of to this day.
Oh. And then, of course, Pac St. Clair that you've already alluded to, and that became a major boat dealer and manufacturing company in Kansas.
He was the greatest example of how to do things. And his claim to fame starting the company, we were like little bitty, you know, just a snuff. And he always taught that it didn't make any difference that we were small. We could not help the fact that we were small, but there was no one or nobody that could keep us from being the best.
Hmm. That's a great line, isn't it? Great thought.
Nothing could stop you from being the best but yourself.
Yeah.
And by being the best, they finally became the biggest.
So they're selling boats across the United States? Maybe
across the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And again, they're manufactured what town?
Neodesha, Kansas.
That's the biggest employer, I suppose.
Oh, yes. Indeed.
And Pac has a place here on Grand Lake.
Mm-hmm. And at Ocean Reef in Florida. Spends winters in Ocean Reef and summers up here on Grand.
Okay. So Arrowhead, then, it had a restaurant when you bought it?
Yes. It had a restaurant, and they were operating a program, which a lot of places did in that day, which was in order to serve liquor by the drink, they had a scam system that you were a private club and you put the names on the bottles of the members, and somehow or another between the county sheriff and all that, you know, you got by with it. And so we were selling liquor by the drink and calling ourselves a private club, Arrowhead Resort. I was next door and watching closely the Cherokee Yacht Club. Oh my gosh, they were charging like $35 a month for their members to belong to that place. And I thought, boy, that is the target. So as soon as I bought it, I changed the name of it from Arrowhead Resort to Arrowhead Yacht Club. And then we started taking on the traits of a for real yacht club. We watched our membership closely. We didn't serve anybody but members. And we tried to do everything in our power to elevate our level and be a real yacht club. We joined the Yacht Clubs of America, Registry of American Yacht Clubs, and they took us. And so we had the plaque, you know, here we are. That made it where members could travel and go to other yacht clubs outside of Oklahoma, and they could come here as well, which a lot of them did.
Mm-hmm. So,
but we developed the critique and the culture of a private club.
Did you get blowback for people who were regulars coming in? And then when you said, now we're going to have a membership only, $35, was that a big deal to people?
Always. There were those that fought it, always. But there were more that were proud of being private and exclusive. And we tried to maintain that.
They knew that Cherokee was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that something you dreamed up on the lake. If they could do it, why couldn't you?
Yes.
Cherokee, then, when was that built?
I don't know exactly when it was built. I know that the Registry of American Yacht Clubs, it always says established in like 47.
Mm.
But I discovered in a closet a list of all the Commodores. And they were electing Commodores since 1940. Now, all that history is gone, and I don't know anyone or who knows, but they were an organized club from the very beginning of the lake.
When you say electing Commodores, what does mm-hmm. what does that mean?
Well, yacht clubs have a Commodore usually. That's the chief number one person, ceremonial position, except at Cherokee it wasn't. They served on the board, and after so many years you got to be the Commodore for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I discovered that list of the Commodores since 1940.
I'm interested, too, that you walked into areas where you had no experience, like food, and you hadn't been a restaurateur, so you had to manage a restaurant that you had never really had any experience at.
Well, in my before life in college in the fraternity business, I'd been a house treasurer, and I had managed the kitchen.
Oh.
And hired cooks and watched food cost and did that sort of thing. You know, we served three meals a day, you know, 9 months a year.
Look at the experience you were getting that was going to cultivate.
And it was free.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Are you a foodie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, still am.
And see, I'm not. Yeah. And my wife can taste something, oh, that's no good, and all that, and all that. But and so you certainly know when your chefs are putting out good food or bad food.
Yeah, I was taught by some of the best, really and truly.
Taught by who?
Primarily one of the best chefs I ever had was Joe Howerton, who had come from Shangri-La. He was a crackerjack, and he could cook anything, and he could assemble a crew, and he would make demands, and they would follow through, and they would get it done. He was probably one of the best I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. One of your chefs recently died.
Yeah, Mark Lassandra.
Yeah.
Tremendous guy.
And he was real likable. Everybody.
Yeah, over 20 years in the kitchen. He followed Joe. Joe, unfortunately, died of cancer. Consequently, Joe's widow, Brenda, well, I eventually married her.
Oh.
And I always said the reason I married her was I couldn't afford to hire her. And she was a big part of that, of running the front of the house. And they just did their jobs very well, made me look very good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.